Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Okay. All right, this is the first time I've ever looked at the camera, so it's making me uncomfortable. Jenny, do you feel uncomfortable?
I'm not looking at the camera, yes.
Yeah, don't. Right. Don't. It's taken me 16 episodes to get to the point where I can look at the camera, and now I feel very out of my comfort zone. Baz makes it look so easy. Anyway, Baz isn't here, viewers, so welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe together with Guinness. That went all right, didn't it?
Nailed it.
Yeah, that went all right.
Yeah, it was good.
We need a massive performance this week because we're rudderless. We've no host, really.
Yeah.
So I would just imagine it's just us just waiting to be asked questions to.
I don't know. I'm relying heavily on this. And I'm hoping I can just read off the sheet.
Yeah, I think we need a massive one.
Baz just sits here and he's like, so weekend.
Yeah, he's like, whatever. Like, I'm in a band. I've got a nose piercing.
Yeah.
Do your worst. No, we need to dig deep.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah,
we need to be like...
No pressure.
We need to be like Robert Redford, Meryl Streep in Out of Africa. We need massive performances. Yeah? We need to be like Pete O'Mahony and Ian Henderson at the Aviva 2017, denying England the Grand Slam and making their way onto the line.
Jodie Foster, Anthony Hopkins, Silence of the Lambs.
Nice, yeah, that's big, yeah, that's big.
And you'd like stare down the camera and kind of nail that.
Yeah. Rocky against Ivan Drago.
Frantically trying to think of other duos and can't.
Yeah, no, sorry, that wasn't a duo. That was we both need to be independently as Rocky.
Yeah.
And then I also thought, I wonder if we could have a training montage in the build-up to this episode. I need you to join in there.
Okay, no, I will. Yeah, but yeah. I was trying to do, and at the same time, we turn and face the camera.
Yeah, okay. So nice.
I feel like if we do it again, it'd just be weird.
Definitely don't do it again. Anyway, so did you watch much rugby the weekend?
Not loads.
No,
not
me
enough.
Neither.
Not enough. Yeah. For someone that's meant to do a podcast all about rugby.
Yeah.
Today or this weekend, no. I watched a good bit of the Super Rugby.
Yeah.
Just the way the Pro 14 games fell, it was really awkward.
Yeah.
So no. Did you?
I did. I watched mostly highlights really, and I saw the Ulster game. Ulster got a fairly crucial away game, away win in Ospreys. It wasn't a great game, to be honest. It was a bit drab and there was a lot of drop balls and there wasn't a lot of excitement in it, but anyway, they got the win.
Win. And Henderson's back?
Henderson's back, yeah. A few guys did well. I thought Ulster actually played quite well, with not a lot of reward for it, really. A few young fellas doing well. Eric O'Sullivan did well. Mike Laurie was going well. The wee 10 for a while and then he got sparked out. And that's the second time he's been knocked out in 6 weeks or something.
Like out?
It looked floppy, yeah.
Okay.
It looked like he was kind of on his way to the deck and he was already kind of a little bit limp.
Oh, that like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're big fans of his.
Okay.
Here on Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby.
I've heard, yeah.
Jenny and Andrew's House of Rugby.
No, don't say that. That's too much pressure again. I'm like a side bit that's just here because he's gone off to look at Niagara Falls.
I know. So. Yeah, you see his Instagram.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Anyway, listen, let's stop talking about Baz.
Yeah.
I'm fed up with that guy putting us under pressure.
We can do this.
We can thrive without Baz.
Well, it's a concussion as well, kind of going on to that. Halfpenny, seems to be out for the England-Wales game and probably for a bit longer as well.
Yeah.
Don't think he's got many minutes, or he didn't actually play. He was pulled off he was on the injury list for club team. And yeah, again, that's a few kind of concussion kind of things in a while, or return to play is delayed and then you're like, oh, he's nearly back and delayed again.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a loss for him for Wales. And then they're missing, there's another bigger is out as well.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're speaking about Wales, and we should be going right back to Ireland.
Yeah, well, other injuries for this weekend. Obviously, Chris Farrell picked up a knock as well on his knee.
He's so unlucky.
I know. Yeah. Well, we don't know what
Hopefully
way it's going to be. Yeah.
But fair play, like he's kind of like player that, you know, the way it's always hard to, if you've got any kind of layoff, whether it's like a 4 week injury or a longer, he seems like you can kind of chuck him in the deep end.
Yeah.
And he's. Like, he always rises to the occasion. Like,
yeah.
It's fair play. I don't think a lot of players they take a while to kind of build back into a performance, and he seems to be able to jump in and do a job really well. Case in point, like, you know, Wales last year and again this year.
Yeah, even whatever game Munster played, Edinburgh, I think that was his comeback game, and he was brilliant straight away. But yeah, so that would be a big loss. I don't know what way Henshaw is, actually.
Is Ringrose out as well?
Ringrose is gone, Henshaw's gone. Bundy Aki always stays fit, doesn't he?
Yeah, like it is really impressive.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's in the mix all the time, like such an abrasive player that sometimes you'd assume like he's bound and he probably is full of niggles and stuff, but he's just,
yeah,
he's always available. And again, like you mentioned, like we've done before, centres, and the first names that pop up are Henshaw and Ringrose, uh-huh, but like it's Aki all the time, and yeah, he never drops a certain standard. He's always hitting those marks. So
yeah.
I think you can totally build a backline around what he's capable of doing as well.
Yeah.
Just kind of don't give him enough credit.
No, absolutely. So the other one's Will Addison. Didn't play for Ulster the weekend. Ulster put out McCluskey and Cave, actually, who both went really well. But yeah, so Will Addison, if he's not playing there, you'd imagine he'll be looking at starting against Italy, probably.
13?
Probably.
Yeah.
I doubt they'd be changing 15 again. Like,
no, I don't.
Three
think
different
so.
15s in three games. I wouldn't have thought it'd be changed again.
No, so it's not ideal.
I'm not sure. I doubt Bundy Aki and Will Addison have played together. I'm not sure. They maybe did in the autumn.
Pat, but have they? Will Addison? Will Addison?
Yeah.
And Bundy Aki?
Yeah, together, yeah. And then Tom Farrell, I suppose, who had a decent game as well. But they seem to be it. Henshaw, maybe, but yeah, Ringrose definitely out. But yeah, the fact that Addison didn't play at all at the weekend would make you think that he's going to get pulled in. So,
sorry, I just turned to Guru, Pat. That was like kind of pretty curveball. Sorry there.
I think I got a look there as if, why didn't you give me a heads up?
Keep on your toes.
Just got me scrolling on my phone there. I was like, what do you want to know?
Passing notes to the back of class. Bring that note up here.
We're not entertaining enough.
Then obviously Joey might get a start at 10. And then I'm not sure, would Cooney get a go as well, maybe?
Like,
I don't know if he'll make wholesale changes. I don't know if the way Wales did. But
and it'll be interesting to see, not for the Italy game, but will Marmion be back in the mix as well for the latter stages of the Six Nations too?
Yeah.
Like again, like we've hit on this already, there's still so many players that aren't in camp that you'd be like, you could put them in there and they would do a really good job.
Yeah.
So no, I'd like to see Cooney get a game. Do you know, I'd imagine it's hard, you know, you're going away and you're on the bench and you don't get minutes and you're just nearly like, except for the first time I've ever played, we were away in France and the stadium was full, and it's never been like at a women's game now like it is, but in 2012 it wasn't the case. So anytime Goose, our coach at the time, turned around and looked at the bench, I was kind of like, oh my god, make yourself small, don't let this happen, I don't know enough, this is how am I even here? But like the minute I didn't get on in that game, and then I regretted it. But once you're on the bench for a while, you're like, oh, give me, like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if it's the same for some people, but you're like dying to get on. And it's kind of hard not getting those minutes week in, week out. So,
yeah. So you, like, is that like a nervous thing? Like you're kind of going, oh, I'm anxious about the game. I'm anxious about getting on.
Yeah. Like when I came in to camp, it was already, they'd already selected the training squad for Six Nations. And so it was the final and I wasn't in it. I'd just taken up rugby maybe a year and a half, 2 years before that. And they basically flew over any of the Irish exiles. I was living in London at the time to play in a warm-up game against the girls before they kicked off the championship. And like we got absolutely hockeyed. Like, yeah, it was like tackle bags with a pulse. That is what we were. And it was my third game in the back, so I played like second row and flanker for a while. So I was like an absolute dope. I could just not. Well, I felt like that I was. And that was grand. It was 3 weeks in. They only had 2 or 3 weeks left. And then Six Nations was kicking off. Flew back to the UK and then got a phone call from Gemma Crowley, who was the manager at the time. Uh-huh. And she and I kind of assumed, because I injured one of the Irish girls in a tackle. And I was like, oh, guts. Like, that was my...
You thought she was calling to charge
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I was like, oh, no, I'm not, like, I'm eating beans and tuna. That's my student diet. And it was a call in work. I was working in a bar at the time, so I was like, oh, no. And she's like, oh, like, what are you doing next
No
weekend?
More beans and tuna for you, Jenny.
Yeah. Prime life. So, yeah, I got invited back to the... fourth or fifth week of the Six Nations training thing, like, not like completely clueless, went to that. I think maybe went to a second one and they cut the squad. I got cut and then somebody got injured and that's how I was in the squad in 2012, just like 2 or 3 weeks in, really late, hence my like, please don't put me on, yeah. I will, whatever. And then in the end it turned out okay, got my first cap.
I'd imagine Italy. that's yeah. Really common though. Like just rugby is always, I've always thought this, it's so fickle, and whenever things aren't going well or you've got injuries, it changes so quickly, and your misfortune becomes someone else's misfortune very quickly, or the other way around.
Yeah,
I mean the a good example is Dan Levy in last year's Six Nations. You know, am I right in saying Sean got injured,
yeah.
And then
Van der Fleer,
Josh got injured, yeah. And then Dan came in. So Dan was effectively third choice seven, came in. And how good was he last year?
Was he like, did he get a few man of the matches? Or if he didn't, he was up there in terms of like, where did this guy come from? Like, he was class.
Yeah.
No, there's definitely, you kind of, it's like a roller coaster. You take the highs and you try and take the lows and stuff.
I bumped into Dan Levy actually the other day. I was in Dublin and he brought to my attention a story that I didn't realize was interpreted this way. So when I was in Scotland a couple of weeks ago, I bumped into James Ryan. And I was trying to think quickly. I'm not sure I've ever met James Ryan before. So I just went, "Hi, James." I thought maybe, who knows, maybe he'll know me.
I played against Chicago that
day. I beat the All Blacks, James. Nice to meet you. So I went, "Hi, James." And he goes, "Hey, how you doing?" And I went, "Andrew." Andrew, and like, in hindsight, I maybe should have gone trim me maybe or something.
Yeah.
But then Dan Levy was telling me that, because I remember I got in the lift and I went, I think I've become a pothole. I've been retired 8 months and now I'm that guy that we hated trying to chat to guys, you know, whenever they're vulnerable, when they're on their own. Hey, how's things? What's it like being a professional rugby player? You know? Anyway.
What's Joe's mood?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's Joe really like? Yeah. So anyway, apparently James, he realized then afterwards, and then we were both like having these independent moments where he was like, "Oh, that should have known," and then I was like, "Oh, I shouldn't have said him." So
I'm picturing kind of like a rom-com, and like you're in your room and he's in his room and he's like going over, he's like, "I should have said this."
Yeah Here. So stupid.
Oh,
yeah,
God, he's never gonna add me on Facebook.
Yeah
Oh, I love those awkward elevator chats.
Oh man. Nice. Yeah, it was fine. I just moved on. I just put it to the back of my mind until Levy brought it up there again.
Maybe he might hear this and Andrew's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Is that how you interpret that story?
Well, the fact that you didn't even go, "No, you may not address me as Trimby, it's Andrew."
Yeah. We're not there yet, mate. Yeah.
You've got to earn it. Oh.
Anyway, Pat's going to give off to us here.
Sorry.
So anyway, right, so there's a couple of other fellas got a bit of game time. John Cooney, Jordy Murphy got a bit of game time. Ian Henderson got a bit of game time for Ulster and got penalised for a bit of a neck roll, and we're sort of hoping nothing else comes of that. But
but I will say no more.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Munster, Andrew Conway probably put himself in the mix a little bit.
Oh yeah, I actually saw some highlights. He did really well.
Got a couple of tries.
Yeah. Munster had a good game.
He might get the nod. We'll see. For Leinster, Jack McGrath, Andrew Porter got a bit of game time. For Leinster, Connacht, Alton Delam went well. Apparently, carrying left, right, and centre. He's a serious athlete, him.
Oh,
gets
yeah.
Gets on the pitch.
His stride is like it's a proper gallop.
It's a gazelle.
You're kind of like, his legs aren't moving that fast. But then when you see the distance he's covering, you're like, oh, that's impressive.
He's got tiny little ankles. like these little ankles, like if he wasn't wearing boots, he'd be sinking.
Oh,
he would.
That's a really tiny ankles. Tiny ankles.
Not wearing boots. If he wasn't wearing feet, sorry.
Yeah, I was like,
more importantly. Yeah, okay. He's got tiny ankles, but he's very athletic. And
okay, so they'd be really narrow hooves.
Yes.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm picturing him as a senator.
As a senator?
Senator.
Yeah.
Yeah, the little half horse, half... I'm going to stop talking.
Like the wheelies from The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
Yeah.
Sorry, no, it's The Wizard of Oz. No, never mind.
No, there was one on the Tumney. Oh, God.
We need to be careful.
We're veering wildly off here.
Listen, let's...
sorry, Baz.
Save that kind of stuff for Balderdash.
Yeah, I know. We've got a guest Balderdash this week, Jenny.
Yeah.
It's not easy, is it?
It's actually really hard. Yeah.
I find the whole process quite therapeutic. I just think of the least likely outcome for anything or the least likely job or situation you could find yourself in. And I'm like, oh, imagine that was real. Can I create a real example?
I just pick someone. I'm like, how could I embarrass them using this medium?
Yeah,
that's perfect. Kind of route I went down. Yeah.
So you played against Italy a few times?
Yeah, I got my first cap against Italy and then was played away. Like, not too many times. I should probably know the number offhand, but maybe 5 or 6 times maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like... Wherever we've gone, I think we only played near Rome once. Uh-huh. And, like, it was the nicest hotel we've ever been in.
Really?
Yeah. Like, we went insane on the hot chocolates.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. It was just basically melted chocolate with a garnish of milk.
Oh, nice.
So the nutritionist, obviously, that was all kind of on the side.
Yeah.
And all that. So, yeah. And then any of the times it's been up north near Milan. So our Grand Slam decider was in Parabaggio in 2013, and it was freezing. The pitch was absolutely abysmal. Like, you'd see a picture of it, and it didn't look playable. Like, you'd kick the ball and it would hop twice and then just stop, like dead stop. So it made for lovely rugby. 6-3 final score in the end.
Oh man, 6-3.
Yeah.
Sounds like a thriller.
I was on the bench as well, myself and an Ulster girl, Ashley Baxter. We were injured, we got injured in France, or against France the week before. So we had to sit out. And
injured, so they put you on the bench?
No, because it was Grand Slam and we had like knocks, and they were sending us to, some of us were doing sevens as well. So we had to go to, for a World Series, we're in China, we're playing in Hong Kong and then in China a week and a bit later. So we weren't playing. Like, I tore my calf muscle and I can't remember what Bax did. So they flew us out separately, but we were staying in the same hotel as the girls. We arrived the day of the game and, yeah, we were sitting on the sideline. We're like, this is, whoa. Like, it was horrible. Mm. Yeah, it was not great rugby. And we were Baltic. I think this Italian cameraman was walking up and down and he saw our miserable cold faces and kind of offered to get us a drink. Yeah, and we just assumed it would be like hot chocolate or whatever, something warm. And he returned with like 2 little plastic cups of water, which is still nice of him. So he's like, just knock it back or whatever, knock it back. So myself and Bax knocked it.
You must have been suspicious when he said knock it back.
Well, he was kind of being really aggressive, telling us to drink it. So we kind of panicked, knocked it back, and it was guapa, this Italian, it's basically Italian poutine, blew the socks off us. Both of us started crying. And at that time, the camera kind of turned and the two utter asses, myself and Bax, were like crying and kind of doing this and looked like idiots. And it didn't make any sense because it was 3-3 at the time and there was 2 subs like being zapped. So
is that what it looked like? You were just you were so emotional about the game?
Yeah.
Like where the game was going?
And there was still like 50 minutes to go. So yeah, I got texts off my friends like, are you all right? My nicer friends said that and the others were like, sap.
Sap.
Like, yeah, just like so. Support.
Oh, you're just like, oh, I love 6-3 wins. I love bad weather conditions.
Well, do you like playing in Italy yourself, or
only played in Italy once or twice. Sorry, once. In 2007, whenever we got beat, that was the year we got beat. Vincent Clerc scored at Croke, actually, to in the last play of the game to win the game, and then they got beat by someone else along the way, and then France won, beat us on points difference in the end, and they were playing Scotland. After the game, we just scored as many points as we could against Italy, and then we were waiting to see if Scotland were going to do us a favour, limit France's point scoring. And Ewan Murray, the prop, went over at one stage, and we were all in the bar, buzzing, thinking we have a chance of winning the Six Nations here. And then the feed went on the TV, so it just went black. And then someone then goes, right, we better get going here. We've got to be at the dinner in 20 minutes, so we had to go up to rooms and get ready. And we were just walking about going, we may have won the Six Nations, but we don't know.
That's mad.
Yeah.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
And you kind of, well, you had that with, well, you were at least able to watch it with the Six Nations in 2015?
Yeah.
You were like waiting on a result as well.
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't involved that time. Mm. I was injured at the time. But yeah, that's right. Yeah, they had to, because they were all in their suits when they lifted the trophy at the end. I was in Italy one other time, actually, but I was over as, similar to yourself, I was over as like 24th man. And
they're great. That's
grateful. I know. So I went over, it was in the run up to that, it was Kidney was the coach, and generally myself and Donegal Gallen had this like thing where if we got beat, it was either his fault or it was my fault. And one of us got dropped, and then we would go into the meeting after having got beat the weekend before, the selection meeting, and we both looking at each other going, listen, it's one of us. Fingers crossed it's you and not me. One of us is getting the axe here. But on that occasion, both of us got the blame. So we were both chopped, and we were both 24th and 25th men going to Italy. And we were like, listen, not ideal, but stuff it. Let's have a bit of a city break, the two of us. We're like, listen, we're going to Rome for a few days, and we haven't got that much responsibility now. We've got to turn up the sessions and the meetings and stuff, but we may as well have a good time. So we did...
the scooter. I can picture you on a scooter, Donegal Callaghan wrapped around you, Roman holiday.
Yeah, like Dumb and Dumber.
Even better.
Take my spare gloves. My hands are getting sweaty. so we did Trevi Fountain, Spanish Steps, went out for coffees, out for pizzas, ice cream, and then... after the captain's practice on the Friday, we went and did an open top bus tour. And we were like driving around Rome, and then we went past a few of the lads who were sitting having coffees, whatever. And we were there, good luck at the weekend, fellas. All the best. We had the time of our lives, care in the world. And then come game time. And this was the year, I don't know what year this was, Ireland got beat. And it was whenever they got loads of injuries, and then Pete O'Mahony ended up playing on the wing for Ireland. I can't remember exactly what the connotations were, but anyway, needless to say, Italy played really well, and we were crap, and we got beat. And then myself and Donegal were just like, for once, this is not our fault. So we just like stuff it. What can you do?
Nice. Yeah. Free tour of Rome.
Exactly. Yeah.
Grant. Yeah. Pick it up.
Came back
tiramisu.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry,
yeah.
Declan.
So that was that's my experience of Rome.
Yeah, I don't know, I like going to Paddy. Like, and the women's team they're definitely on the up. Like they're like occasionally they'll like beat the bigger. Like they've beaten France a few times. Like going there is they're always up for it.
Yeah,
and they're starting to get some more decent kind of crowds as well. So
what sort of crowd would they be getting then?
Over 3,000 anyway, like, because sometimes they have it in like really remote stadiums, on like random hours, but like in the Six Nations at the moment with the women, there's been a few like record-breaking attendances, like Ireland's home game, the England game, that was the highest or the highest numbers at a women's game in Ireland, and then the following week, England or France were playing England. In England, and it was another record-breaking attendance. So it's hopefully for the next home game in France or against France, it'll be kind of similar enough. Like Donnybrook will be packed. Like it does make such a difference.
Yeah.
Like even when I started, there was like you can at the warm up maybe you can have a look around. And you're like, oh, there's Dad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now that's kind of
now your dad doesn't go.
Now
can't get tickets.
Yeah. too expensive, rich, too rich. Yeah, so like, and that's really cool. Like before we were, it was like, and I said it, like family and friends, and now it's all like, it's an international game and it's cheaper. Yeah. So why not like,
yeah,
give it a go. So that's my shout out, go to the game.
We were talking to Fiona Coughlin earlier in the week, and she was saying that over in Italy, it's like a big event, the women's games, because the towns bid for the games to get them over there. Like.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. They get like, I remember one in 2015 we were playing, and there's like, they have this big, they put up huge tents and marquees and have like 3 or 6 course meals. And obviously you're sitting beside all the kind of players. So it's really nice, and they have like music and stuff, but none of the girls speak Italian, and a lot of the Italian players don't speak English. So we're sitting beside each other, and it's a lot of like, I'm going to talk louder and hopefully you understand what I'm saying, like, and vice versa. But then one
did
of
you
the
try saying it in English with an Italian? Yeah, did you try that?
No, but I have thrown the like yeah, the loose, like the yeah,
or the Italian football to the referee. Come on,
Caravaggio. yeah, they love that.
Yeah.
Well, one of the girls we find out. So Sene Inupu, she was in here a while ago. Uh-huh. So Sene played rugby in Japan with George. George was playing, her husband was playing in Japan as well. So George speaks Japanese quite well, and so does Sene. And so we're sitting down anyway, and I don't know how they figured it out, but one of the Italian rugby players was living in Japan for a while, so they were both speaking Japanese to each other. Uh-huh. And that's how... that's how we kind of figured out what was going on. It was just like, and obviously everyone else at the table was like, oh, am I dealing with my life? I feel so stupid. And then like, yeah, pretty much fluent Japanese from Sene and this yeah, Italian woman. So it was pretty impressive.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm happy with that. Carry on.
If you were like players to watch out for in the Italy game, I know it's still a little bit a ways, but can you think of any offhand that you were like, all, well, apart from Parise, like he's...
No, just Parise, really.
Fair enough.
Who Parise has lost more test matches than anybody else in the world.
Oh, that is a... That
what
is
a shame a, for such a class player.
Yeah, that is...
What that a is, loser.
Parise, good get. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's... And like, even with San Francisco, he's not got great wins there.
Yeah, either. Well, they've been up and down, haven't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah.
Okay, so loser, great. And what was the other? There's a guy he played with Exeter Chiefs for a while. Is it their 13? And now he's back.
Capagnaro, yeah. Is he go to Wasp now?
Yeah. Like he's again like not like he has flashes of brilliance, and then you're like, why did you do that?
Yeah, yeah.
I think especially in a position like 13.
Yeah.
Like being kind of solid and consistent, but if you do one like. One small error can just be glaringly obvious and completely turn the game. I said, like, even Ireland, Italy and Chicago, like, he was having a great game and then a few absolute stinkers.
Yeah.
And just...
He was captain that day, I think.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
I don't know, I've never seen him be captain before, but I'd imagine that might have had a bit of an impact.
Probably.
A little bit of a distraction, maybe.
Yeah.
The other one who's injured at the minute is Manozzi. Is that his name, Pat? Mm. Matteo Manozzi.
Yeah,
He's the wee fellow, the wee fullback, who is class, absolute live wire. But I was chatting to Conor O'Shea about this a few weeks ago at an event at the Aviva, and he was saying, yeah, he's out at the minute, but he's the sort of guy, when they get to the World Cup, if they get 2 or 3 other guys, like your Campagnaros, Parises, Matteo Manozzi, these guys, if they're all fit, then, you know, you just never know. There's enough talent there that they could produce a wee bit of a, like, something similar. This is what Conor O'Shea was saying, do something similar to what Japan did to South Africa at the last World Cup. That's what they're holding out for. If they get everybody fit and there's a bit of flair, there's a bit of talent, then you just never know. Every now and again, they'll get a big performance and get a big result. Yeah, hopefully not this weekend.
Yeah, save that for the World Cup. Really. Yeah. Save it for, 'cause, like, Conor O'Shea's been... Like I was chatting to some of the guys over there, and they were talking to some of the Treviso players. And when Conor O'Shea took over, they found it so strange that he was like, he would take turns going to the Italian clubs. Suppose the previous coach, the French coach now, never visited at all, which I found bizarre. Yeah, he just was so removed. It was the national squad and anything underneath that was not important. And like, I think it's important that your head coach is getting kind of stuck in that way. Yeah. And that's
especially when there's only two clubs.
Yeah, like it's not that.
Yeah, yeah. I think like in Scotland, I would imagine Gregor Townsend would be doing the rounds, and in Ireland, Joe would be up a bit. Andy Farrell would be up in Ulster doing the rounds all the provinces. So yeah, I think you kind of have to have that connection, don't you?
Like maybe that's another, like with France as well. Like yeah. I don't like in talking, like one of the girls was with Italy during the World Cup, and like he didn't even learn Italian or anything. I know we're speaking about like the yeah. French coach, like Brunel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's like, I just find that bizarre. Like if yeah. I think you need to show players that you're making an effort.
Yeah. I know Conor Shea was really conscious to try and do as much as he could. I think he was always concerned that the conversations that you have with a coach, that they're, I don't know, I suppose whenever I was talking to a coach, I always listened really carefully to what they were saying. What's the reasons why I'm being dropped, or what's the reasons why I'm being selected, or what do I need to work on? That's really important, that information is communicated
yeah.
perfectly and correctly. And Conor Shea was very aware of that. Just that, obviously, language thing, it's very important to make sure that he's communicating that and the guys are all on the same page. But listen, let's leave it there.
Nice.
We've got Kieran Marmion coming up in a minute on the blower.
Give him a grilling.
Yeah.
How do you feel like it's going so far?
Pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel a little bit more comfortable than I did 20 minutes ago.
Okay.
How do you feel?
Grant.
Terrible.
I'm still like, oh, I've definitely said weird stuff already.
I've said weird stuff. I said language in the wardrobe and I meant, what was it? Never mind.
I don't know. I didn't join you in the Rocky theme tune. I was like, I let him down.
Yeah, I know. No, you did. You did.
It's like Baz wouldn't have done that.
Anyway, let's leave it there.
Yeah.
Marms, how are you getting on? It's Trimby here.
And Jen.
Hey, Trimby. Oh, good. Hey, Jen. How are you getting on?
Yeah, how are you feeling after coming back from the dead?
Good. Yeah, got a good 25 minutes under the belt, so obviously good to get out on the pitch. The lungs are a bit sore afterwards, but kind of expecting that anyway. So just happy to get out there and have a run around, really.
Have you been absolutely hating Keelan Blade because he's been playing well in your absence?
Yeah, he's been going well. It's been it's tough to watch when other people go well and you can't really do too much yourself. So, but yeah, no, I'm delighted for him. But hopefully now I can get back on the pitch and hopefully put in a few good performances myself.
Yeah, yeah, good man. I'm sure Joe's missed you. I know he's a massive fan of yours, and he obviously gave you the nod in November. Am I right in saying you'd picked up the knock? It was your ankle, wasn't it?
The ankle, yeah.
Yeah, did you pick that up before November and then you kind of carried it into the November series?
Yeah, I did that up in your place, up against Ulster just before Christmas. So, yeah, I had took a few weeks out after I did that and played a few games back for Connacht. It was fine, like, it was fucked up, but I think after the November series, we decided that we'd get it right, get the up on it, and hopefully have no more issues with it going forward.
Yeah, okay. So and was it massively affecting you, or like was it one of these ones with the World Cup? Maybe similar, because Jack McGrath was in here and he'd been carrying, forget what it was.
Back or something? Or hip?
Yeah.
Hip, wasn't it?
Hip, yeah. So he'd been carrying that. And the same sort of thing, because there's obviously such a big 6 or 8 months ahead of you. Is that the mindset, was it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think when I heard it in that Ulster game, I heard it a few times afterwards. Just, time I'd catch it and it'd be pretty sore for a few days. So I think we said that going forward, it'd be best to sort it out and then hopefully have no more issues for the rest of the season and going forward as well. So hopefully now all the recovery's done and hopefully it holds up and there won't be any more problems with it for the rest of the season, yeah.
Is it a weight off your shoulders, you know, with those kind of constant niggles that you have to manage? Is it now that you've got your 25 minutes and you're kind of confident going into the next game, is it like a bit like a weight off the shoulders, or just didn't really think too much about it?
I think the ones of that game on the weekend, the main thing was just getting a few contacts and getting through a few minutes, and I was a bit nervous. I've never really been injured before, so you do have a bit of nerves going into it, thinking will it hold up or not. But you just got to trust what the specialists and physios say as well. So obviously they're confident of you going into the game. So, but again, in the back of your head, you are a bit nervous. So it's just getting through those first few contacts and minutes, really.
And then the last kind of 6 weeks or so, have you just been getting back running, just being ran ragged by the S&C coaches, and then just doing PRs in your day offs and stuff like that?
Yeah. I'm pretty glad to get out of the injury group, to be honest. They had us doing our own sessions, doing lots of fitness, and getting back up to speed, just learning to run again, really. But yeah, it's been tough 6 weeks. Again, when you go into a game, there's nothing really that replicates a game, so it's blowing a bit on the weekend, but I guess the more you play, the easier it gets in the end, I think.
Yeah, the first bit of being injured is kind of the nice, it's like the honeymoon period, I suppose, where you're kind of, you get a lot of sympathy and you don't have to be outside training when it's freezing wet. You kind of just do your uppers with your mates and then go for coffees between sessions. And then once that wears off, then they make up for it, I think. But
if you like your physio and you like your S&C, your early stages of injury, and then when it turns and you're like, they're all pricks and I hate them, then you're like, I can see the light. So the ankle is getting better, but I hate you all.
That sounds about right.
But here, good win for Connacht then, back on track. Or not back on track, they've been winning.
Yeah, yeah, we have been winning. That was obviously a pretty crucial game for us. It was 2 points behind us going into that game. So it was a must-win game, really, for us. And I think a few results over the weekend kind of went our way, with Ospreys losing and Cardiff losing as well. So I think we have, five or six games left in the season. I think we have Glasgow up next. So next few games will be big in terms of where we finish up at the end of the season. So that was a big block for us. I think we're away to Glasgow this weekend. So it's a game we'll target. I think they'll be missing a good portion of their squad to the Six Nations. So it's a game, I think we lost by a point over there last year. So it's definitely a game that we can target and try and win this weekend as well.
Yeah, you're sitting in third at the minute. I know, like top two are kind of a little bit ahead, about 9 points. I think you're 9 points off second, but like you're in decent shape there to get a playoff anyway.
Yeah, that's the plan. I think we've got the games coming up as well. All the teams around us, obviously Glasgow, Ospreys, Cardiff. So they're all pretty big games now till the end of the season. Obviously, we want to win as many of them as we can and put ourselves in the best position we can to get a playoff spot at the end of the year.
Potentially, you could be, so if you're sitting third, then you could end up playing off either like Treviso or sitting second in Conference B, isn't that right?
Yeah.
Treviso and Edinburgh. I'm not saying those are easy fixtures, but the way they're sitting at the minute, you could end up with an away fixture that was very winnable. Obviously, this is way on down the line.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All we can think about really is just putting ourselves in the position to get third, potentially second, maybe if we can get a few wins in the next few games. So all we can do is just concentrate on ourselves and just try and get as many wins as we can from now to the end of the year.
And are you looking forward to going back into camp then during the week?
Well, I'll probably get a bit of game time with Connacht, and I guess I've got to put in a few good performances to get back in there. I think hopefully this weekend now should get a bit more minutes under my belt, see how that goes, and hopefully if I can perform well, then hopefully I can put my hand up to get back in there.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get back in the mix after like doing so well in the autumn. Tell us, am I right in saying you played against Argentina and then played against New Zealand in two games?
Yeah, that's right. Played those two games and then got the operation on the Wednesday after the New Zealand game.
Yeah, it must have been nice that the week before Italy, whenever they sent all the Italian ones off, and it probably didn't look like a touring party that was going to feature kind of in the first picks, I suppose, or against the big names against New Zealand. It must have been nice sitting at home with the Rob Carneys, the Johnny Sextons, the Rory Best of this world, thinking, I'm one of these guys now.
Well, you never know, do you? You never know who's going to get picked for what game. So I think I actually played for Comets that weekend while they were over in Chicago, wasn't it? So, I was told by Joel to get some game time for Comets, so I didn't know really where I stood, to be honest. Like, I was just playing as well as I could for Comets, and then hopefully the next week get picked for that Argentina game.
Yeah, and you were in Chicago for the All Blacks game a couple of years ago as well, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
And how did, after the game, how did it compare, kind of the buzz in the change room? Or I know the build-up to the game in Dublin was massive and almost made the Argentina game and the USA game, either side of it, they were just flat and there was no buzz or no atmosphere in the crowd, but everything was about that All Blacks game. But how did that compare, the dressing room afterwards, compared to Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, over in Chicago, you playing that game, were you?
Yeah, I was, yeah. Playing that one.
Casual in the Chicago game. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously that was special because that was the first time Ireland to beat New Zealand. So, but again, for me, like, I didn't actually get on in that game. So playing in this and playing in the starting position, I guess that meant quite a lot to me. But again, whenever you beat the top side in the world, it's always a great buzz. So I guess they were both pretty special moments, and we definitely enjoyed both of them.
Yeah, so I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I mean, it sounds to me like you're saying Chicago was a better occasion.
Well, I think that time we'd never beaten them before, have we? So
yeah, I agree completely.
I remember that one pretty well. That was good. But no, they're both great. Like, again, for me, being involved in that second game, I enjoyed that hugely. Like, so yeah, both great occasions.
Right. Marms, listen, we'll let you go. I'm sure you've got things to do, but thanks so much for coming on the show, and good luck. Hopefully you get a bit of game time this weekend and get back where you were before.
All right. Cheers, mate.
Good man, Marms. Take it easy. Cheers.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. Bye. Cheers. Bye.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Okay, right. Welcome back to House of Rugby, Rugby Roundup, Part 3.
That was really good. You're getting better at it.
Thanks a lot, yeah.
Oh, cheers. My God. Baz is going to be like, oh, he's taking my job.
Yeah.
He's taking my intro
Suck
job.
Suck on that, Baz.
Enjoy Canada. Maple syrup loving. Yeah.
Whatever you are.
Yeah, whatever.
Tell us, last wee bit of rugby. Last couple of bits of rugby.
Okay.
Other Six Nations games this weekend, apart from Ireland. This is Ireland's last chance, really, of winning Six Nations this year. If Wales beat England, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because after that, then, they've got two home games, Italy and Scotland at home.
And then, can we not... If we beat Wales away, or we beat Wales in Cardiff, does that not do anything? No?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, this is the only chance that England are going to slip up.
Oh, yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah.
Away to Wales.
I think Millennium Stadium as well, that's I think one of the toughest places to go in the Six Nations. So hopefully that will, I think if England had Wales at home, you'd be kind of like,
yeah,
we're kind of done.
Yeah, but we're not done yet.
We're not done
yet. If England beat Wales this weekend, we're pretty much done, aren't we?
Yeah.
I think we're pretty duffed.
Yeah, we're.
At that stage.
We're looking at second.
Yeah.
Which is fine. We just like go under the radar for World Cup and then...
Yeah.
Dark horses.
Oh, man. We're also spoiled, aren't we? What do you mean we didn't win a Grand Slam? What do you mean we didn't win the Six Nations? Second!
Joe!
Yeah. You're fired.
Yeah, we are spoiled.
Yeah.
Anyway. I think that's going to be, the Wales-England game is going to be, apart from like Ireland-Italy, which we'll all be watching.
Yeah.
That game is going to be a whopper.
Yeah.
So it'll be tough, though. Like, again, we said, like, Biggar's out. Halfpenny's out. I think he's one of the best defensive fullbacks when he's fit.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Cardiff.
Yeah.
Cardiff is like a tough
might be
place
tricky.
To, yeah.
Might be tricky.
Fingers
and
crossed.
And then France Scotland. I think we're all hoping France get their finger out a little bit. Are we not?
Yeah. Yeah. Like they've played some lovely rugby, and then they've just. What are you doing?
Yeah.
I don't.
So much talent, so much ability, and then they just, like, last week against Twickenham was just...
It's just sometimes it's really simple basic errors that you kind of, again, like you said, we're spoiled rotten. We don't see these crazy overhead, terrible catch passes. It's pretty much lovely all the time. And then when you see, like, a Frenchman throw at you, you're kind of like, where did that come from? Because we're so used to, like, that those basic skills being pretty much perfect and consistent all the time. And in France, they don't have that. Like one of his, they don't have like a school system. There's no academies in place. So, you know, there's no, like, nothing is filtered down. Basically, you're coming from, you're going straight into a club, and maybe that kind of foundation that you've learned. Like, we're, again, like, so lucky, like Leinster Academy, Munster Academy, all they do trickle up. And you do, when you do come into either a Six Nations squad or your Pro 14 or your Heineken Cup squad, provincial squads, like, the level is pretty high already that you've got to.
They seem to be more concerned about entertaining than winning, and they're doing neither at the minute. To be fair, Dealer Doherty actually last week said, he's a mate of ours.
I saw that. I loved his kick.
He's a friend of ours.
It's pretty impressive.
Big fan of the show.
Yeah. Did you ask him twice?
I didn't, actually.
Okay.
I forgot.
Changed
I was so
up.
Starstruck that I forgot.
Okay.
I was just like this the whole time. And Barry and him chatted away. I just sat and went like this, stared at them. Anyway, he said, he actually knows his rugby quite a bit. He brought us back to rugby. We were going on tangents. He brought us back. But he said, he was asking if the likes of Joe went to France, was coaching France, there's so much talent, so much ability there, would he be able to, or is it something that's just ingrained culturally where they just throw the ball about and they're not pragmatic in their approach, I suppose. I certainly believe that Joe could go into any environment and kind of change the culture, because it's just a little like a subculture, you know, within this team. This is, we know how to win, and Ireland know how to win. But it's, I find it frustrating recently. Sorry, I'm rattling through.
It's all good stuff.
Yeah, I find it frustrating recently that a few journalists have come out and been very critical of Ireland's style or Joe's style. But it's been so good and it's been so relentless for so long. And then that loss against England, and then people are like questioning the whole philosophy. I think it's mad that people are saying this. If you want Ireland to throw the ball about and be frivolous with the ball, then they're going to start, if they take your word for it and take your advice, they're going to start performing like France. And I don't think you'll be that happy with that style of play either.
No, it gives you anxiety, ulcers, and you don't get a win. Yeah. Like, with how Joe is playing, we are playing nice rugby. It's like, okay, some people can brand it as safe, but it's smart. And, like, I don't know, it's tough to beat. It's like, it's tough to beat that.
It's so impressive as well.
Yeah,
they say,
like,
there was one, I think a couple of guys have come out and said, Ireland, they just hold on to the ball. They hold on to the ball. I'm like, well, that's brilliant. And then it's England that are getting the praise at the minute for, you know, discovering all the space in the backfield and resorting to a kicking game. Whenever Ireland did go through a kind of a passage of a lot of kicks, a high percentage of their play was coming from kicks, then they were getting criticism for that as well. So,
like, you can't win. You can't win, like, so. And, well, Ireland can't. Like, they're good at it. So, I don't know. I think just some people like to have that was class all the time, but that's not sustainable.
Yeah.
And that won't get you a win at the end of the day. So, and, like, we're, like, still doing some, like, lovely passages of play that are so entertaining and have such a level of skill. And it's across the board. It's not just, you know, your 13s and fullbacks cycling around the ball. It's from 1 to 15 and the bench that are, like, a part of this really intricate move. Like, Stockdale's try was a beautiful try.
Yeah.
And I was, like, I was watching that again. And I was, like, oh, there's so many little components, and it needs to be perfect in order to make that work, which is true of so many of Joe's set pieces and his moves. Like, you don't get that from just playing around the ball. It doesn't work like that.
No, exactly. You can't. You can't know what 7, 8, 9 of your teammates are going to do exactly, because what you have to do, your contribution has to kind of tie in with everybody else's contribution.
Yeah.
And if you haven't got a plan, or you're not.
It's 15 individuals. Uh-huh. It doesn't work.
It's carnage, yeah. So anyway, we're big fans. We're sticking with this Ireland team, aren't we?
100%.
So anyway, thank you very much for your votes for this week's Guinness Made of More Player of the Weekend. I don't know if this is an award that's really celebrated out there, because they get, effectively, they get nothing. But, I mean, they get a token gesture of that we tell them we're going to send them Paul O'Connell's teeth, yeah, which we don't do. So it's a fair, it's a lazy shambolic award. But the winner of it this week, no, the nominations, let's build it up.
Okay.
The nominations are Jean Klein, Stuart, yep, McCluskey, Jack Carty, and Ross Byrne. And the winner is,
I don't know,
Jean Klein.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, no, that's the way I always react. Sorry. Oh, yeah,
oh, it's in bold right there, and I read it earlier. Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, he's getting teeth, but not really.
Yeah, he's not getting in. Unlucky Jean.
Paddy, are you keeping all these teeth? Do you actually have a set of, like, have teeth? You're just like
stockpiling the teeth?
Yeah.
We'll get all the lads in for like a big end of season bash, and we'll start handing out teeth then.
They won't turn up.
Yeah. Can you have like players? Yeah. So you get like all the regular teeth, but then say if someone has won it multiple times, can we get like a grill, like a gold?
Mm.
Maybe that could be the
nice, yeah, yeah,
piece de resistance, the like top prize.
James Ryan, yeah, he's on course for the grill.
Okay,
the gold,
yeah,
Paulie's teeth grill.
Oh man, I'd love to see Paul O'Connell with a grill. That'd be cool.
So thanks very much for your. Oh no, before we go on to Ask HOR. And we've got a guest, Balderdasher.
Okay.
Jenny, take it away.
Okay. So today, because we were speaking to a nine here in Marmion, mm, I went with one of the best nines that I've ever played with. Her name is Tanya Rosser. So she won multiple AILs, been a part of a couple of World Cups, over 50 caps for her country. What is Tanya doing now? So her brother-in-law took up pigeon racing, and she kind of naturally developed a passion for it. So she's now training racing pigeons. So basically, like, you release the bird, they return home, and there's a few birds, and the quickest bird, like, to cover a certain amount of distance wins.
You have to go out, like, into the countryside, like, and just let them free?
Yeah, you let them free, and then they come home.
And then you just have to drive home quickly before the pigeon,
yeah,
gets there?
Yeah.
Because if you arrive home, and the three pigeons are all there, then you're like, well,
Who won?
Who won?
Well, I think they have it like, so say if you have a pigeon, Paddy has a pigeon, you both set them off, but obviously Paddy's pigeon is not going to go back to your house. So you have like a little GPS or whatever, so it measures like 50 kilometres.
Yeah.
And then it's like they have little chips, I think.
Okay.
Anyway, and there's certain breeds, Tanya was telling me this, there's certain breeds of pigeon that you have to have, they're called Homer pigeons or racing homers is the only type of pigeon that is like built for racing.
Wow.
It's mad. And then okay. It's big in Belgium. Anyway, that's where she's moved to. Maybe that's where she possibly moved to.
Yeah.
Because
that's
big
one
there.
Option.
That's one option. Yeah. So she's racing there. Second, she's coaching the Clontarf men's team with James Downey and playing touch for Ireland. And third, she's launched her own line of organic soaps, but they're rugby themed.
Uh-huh.
So you've got like yellow cardamom ref.
Oh, nice.
And extra time and basil is just a few of them.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Does she do well out of the soap in the soap market? Is that booming?
It's not a great market. There's a lot of competition.
Okay.
Through a lot of different areas. Now she
there's
does
a lot
have
of other rugby pun.
No,
soaps?
She's got a monopoly on that.
Uh-huh.
But it's just the kind of pairings that she chooses aren't the best.
Uh huh.
So she could do better. Hopefully, us talking about it will help her. Soap.
Yeah. Well, it's a
business.
Massive platform.
It is.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Prepare for online orders. Tanya, you're welcome. I don't know if I'm looking at the right camera.
Tanya,
I look at all three.
The eyes of the nation are on us and we're promoting your brand.
Yeah.
Or if we're not. I'm going to go for pigeon. I hope she's a pigeon racer. Please be a pigeon racer. Please don't be just coaching Clontarf with James Downey.
She's coaching Clontarf.
Oh, no. I wanted her to be a pigeon racer.
So do I. As I was like coming up with it, I was like, oh, this would be perfect.
That
like
is
a picture
class.
With like a Del Boy hat and everything.
Yeah. Can I just say, you did a brilliant job. You were extremely convincing. I genuinely did think there was a chance that she was a pigeon racer.
Yes. If I was crap at everything else in this podcast, but I've nailed that.
You're a good liar.
I feel content. Yeah.
You're a creative liar.
Yeah. Yeah.
You went with it as well. You said, yeah, Tanya always says, yeah, about these pigeons, they've got GPS. Right, last feature. Ask HOR. Thanks very much for all your questions. A couple of creative ones this week.
I like them, yeah.
Blue Moon Cinco. If your lives depended on it, what Irish player would you back in a Mario Kart race? I'm not sure if he means the player actually being the character in the Mario Kart race, okay, or someone who played a lot of Mario Kart when they were younger. I remember I went through a 6-month phase of playing Mario Kart nonstop when I was a youngster. And then, like a youngster, like 17, 18 or whatever. And we got in the car and I just couldn't understand, like, where's all the banana? Why am I not slipping on bananas in the car?
Who was your character that you picked all the time?
Luigi or Mario. I went for someone kind of mid, like not heavy, but not too light. Kind of just they could cope with a little bit of physicality.
Okay. I just went light. I was like Toad or Yoshi.
Oh, really? Right. Yeah.
That was.
Yeah. Anyway, Castle Maguire. Rugby seems to be...
Do we answer that or...
No, we didn't. No.
Okay, pass.
Castle Maguire.
Sorry,
rugby.
Blue Moon.
Yeah. Give us a shout again. We'll get the next one, yeah? Rugby seems to be all about jocks these days. How about a Smarty Pants 15 of nerds, dorks and geeks? Dara O'Brien could do some damage in the tight, I'd say.
Yeah, Dara O'Brien could be...
I said O'Brien, yeah.
It's fine. I'm sure he doesn't mind.
Yeah. He'll not watch. Yeah.
Who would I have?
So, do you want to build our team around Dara O'Brien?
Yeah. Okay.
I've got him at hooker.
Yeah, I think that would be solid.
So, I've gone for three. I wasn't sure exactly if they meant like famous people who are really smart that we could just teach to play rugby and join our 15, or if, and again, there's kind of two categories even within rugby. So, I thought there's just nerds and dorks, or there's really smart rugby players. So kind of, I've
made a bit of a mix.
Okay. My type five is more, apart from Dara O'Brien at hooker, is more or less smart rugby players who are all a little bit nerdy, but mostly just smart. I got Tom Court at Loosehead.
Okay, nice.
Very clever. Reads like 3 or 4 books a week.
I thought you were going to say reads books.
Reads comics. Just
he reads books.
He reads sometimes. He reads good. Mike Ross at Tighthead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I actually had him at Tighthead as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've gone for Ian Henderson in the second row. And he is smart, but he's definitely a smart arse. He just outsmarts people a lot, and he revels in it. He just enjoys getting the better of people. And similar role for me, Dev Toner.
Okay.
There's two smart arses. I'd probably bring the worst out of each other, actually. But both clever, both good lads. Yeah. Oh, that's my front five. Have you anybody in the back row? I've got
like a few. I've gone a different direction with a few of them. So I've gone with like one that I picked in terms of nerds. You know, Kevin Smith, the director of like Clerks and Dogma. He's like... solid guy, but like when you said nerds, I kind of went that way, like really talented filmmaker and all that stuff. But I was like, yeah, he could do a job in the Loose. I struggled with second row a little bit. It's kind of like maybe put like Einstein at 7.
Yeah,
just do your thing or whatever. But then I was actually changed from Malloy, so Claire Malloy.
Okay.
So she's a doctor, pretty smart. Well, hopefully.
You like to think so.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Jamie Roberts.
Had him as well.
Just because he's a doctor.
Yeah.
They might not be that smart. My wife's a doctor, so I have to kind of assume doctors are smart.
Yeah, fair enough.
No, she is.
Is she a fan of the show?
Funny, we fell out today because I made some reference to something that happened in the last few weeks. Oh, I said, I'm not doing Balderdash. Jenny's doing Balderdash. And she goes, what's that? I went, you haven't listened to at least 4 episodes.
That hurts.
Yeah, but she said, though, to be fair, she doubled down. She said, I don't like rugby and I don't like movies.
Okay,
so why would I? That's more or less the content.
And we've done like the Rocky theme tune. Fair enough.
I don't like Rocky theme tunes.
Okay. Yeah. Hopefully that, like her being smart, does not correlate with not liking the...
Yeah, I know. Otherwise, it bodes badly for probably all three of us.
Yeah. Okay. Moving swiftly along. Who've you got in the backs?
I'm pretty pleased with my 9-10 combination.
Okay.
I've got Pee Wee Herman and Mr. Bean.
That's actually...
That works well.
That's actually really good.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, Jimmy Roberts at 12. The guy who's in the IT crowd, Richard Ayo, is that how you...
Yeah, Richard Ayo.
Whatever, however you say that. Yeah. Anyway, him, he seems pretty nerdy and smart.
Okay.
And then I'm pleased with my fullback selection as well, Professor Brian Cox.
I had him as well. I just had him in at 8. Huh. I was like, he's probably quick off the
base. He'd get eaten alive, would he not, that wee fella?
I don't know. Maybe he, because he's behind like a lot of Galaxy pictures, it makes him look bigger.
Maybe, so, yeah.
Maybe. Maybe he should be out in the back. Okay, sorry, Brian.
Yeah,
he's
sorry,
probably
Brian.
Watching as well.
Sorry, Professor Brian Cox. Yeah.
I had like Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Do you know, like, she's like an 85-year-old. She's on the Supreme Court in America. She goes to the gym every day, like, for bicep curls, and I'd say nothing would get by her.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I think that'd be...
There's very few of the rest of these have got a balance, apart from Hendy and Dev, where they're both smart, but they're both obviously fairly well established in rugby.
Paula Fitzpatrick, she's an absolute nerd.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. She might not be listening to this, so I can say that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it's a luxury we have, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. Just slate everyone. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I'd have her. Oh, and then Ruth O'Reilly, she could definitely go front row. She's like, loves a good Excel spreadsheet.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'd say she'd probably get, if she was to get a tattoo, it'd be like an Excel spreadsheet and she could just fill it in herself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
she'd do
hey, Ruth,
formulas.
You're an absolute nerd.
Okay, right. I think that's... That'll do. Oh, bourbons or custard creams?
Neither. They both suck.
Yeah. And they both were very popular in the 90s.
Yeah.
So not anymore. Unlucky Aunt Matt McCann. Anyway, listen, thank you very much for your comments and your questions. And thank you for listening and watching us on YouTube. YouTube.
That was the Facebook. Yeah. No, that's what
yeah. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and leave a rating. We really do appreciate your feedback. This is Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe together with Guinness. Thank you for keeping us company.
Casual, nice, friendly ending.
Party on.
Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.